Welcome to the Wale and Yemi Football Pod.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. It's another fresh episode of Nigeria's number one football pod. It's Wale and Yemi Football Podcast, episode infinity. Yeah, I've lost count of the numbers of episodes we've done. Yeah, so we're on 16, right? And lovely. I must say it's been a lovely ride, and welcome to this latest one. We're coming off the back of the first semi-final of the Champions League, and we're also recording on the day of the second semi-final of the Champions League. So there's plenty to chew on today's episode. Yemi's on the other side. We're recording remotely. We're getting used to it. I don't like it. Yemi loves it, but what can we do? And I get a feeling that because of the new development with me, I would have had no choice than to embrace recording remotely as well, because I see no way we'll have been able to be recording physically every Monday or Tuesday with the new development. So welcome to the pod. And by the way, Yemi, I wanted to ask you, I mean, with camp and your kids, have they been affected by the landmark demolition?
Yes, we're hugely affected. I was hoping I won't have...
Hugely affected or loosely affected?
Hugely affected, because the place has been demolished. I was hoping I won't... I've been avoiding having this conversation with a lot of people because it's a bit exhausting and annoying at the same time. But everywhere that I've been across the island looking for a new location for our stuff is about 4 or 5 times more expensive than what we pay at Landmark. So
really, is that a deliberate ploy by these people, knowing that you are forced to leave Landmark, so they are hiking the pricing?
No, it's not a deliberate thing. It is what it is. Sports infrastructure is very limited in Nigeria, and I'm not talking Lagos alone. There's a huge deficit. It's not that's not news. There's a huge deficit in sports infrastructure. Just look around Lagos. You only have one functional stadium in Lagos, and that's Olympic Stadium.
Yeah. What does that? Which just became functional recently.
And is largely being overused at the moment. So
yeah.
So it's a tale of the situation of the country as a whole. It's not been kind. Like I said, it's very exhausting for me. And frustrating at the same time, but hey, we have to soldier on. Like Portable said, after God, my government.
So, yeah.
government and the worst people for you to have an issue with, for you to fight. But hey,
interestingly, before we started recording, I just got a mail from Landmark because I have a citizen's app account.
Oh yeah, you have a citizen's app account.
So I got a mail saying that for those who still have money in their citizen app, that they shouldn't be worried, that they will find a way to transfer those monies back to them. And it just helps to understand the scale of what has gone down at Landmark in the last couple of days. It's a shame, honestly. It's a shame.
You got the chance of giving your kids an experience at that beautiful place.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, my kids have not let me rest since then. Let's go to the beach again. That same place. But unfortunately, how do I tell them that Landmark is no more? Them to have this kind of experience, and they probably have to go farther, because I mean, after Landmark, you have to go deeper into. Do you even call those places the island? All this Ajah and Ashe and stuff like that. You have to go deeper for you to be able to have a much more better experience when it comes to, you know, life. But it is what it is. Shit happens. You know, everybody has to just regroup and try to, you know, re-strategize again. Yeah, so John, yeah. Big shout out to everyone that this has been affected. I don't know if I should be giving them a shout out, but man, I'm wishing you guys a lot of strength in this moment. It's been really emotional for some people as well, even, you know, for those who are, because I mean, this also we threw a lot of people into the job market. You know, jobs have been lost.
Yeah.
You know, jobs have been lost. It's really, and it has a domino effect. That's when what things like this has. All right. We couldn't record on Monday. Maybe the Lord was prepping us for Bayern Real Madrid. You know how these things work now. Anytime we don't record on Monday. You know, but what it means is that we have plenty to chew on and limited time to make this happen. You know, so I might have a meeting in the next 1.5 hours. So let's see what we can, you know, do in this limited time. First things first, we have fan mails.
Yes, we have a few comments
on Spotify.
Yes.
All right, but we don't have fan mails, right?
No, not that I know of.
Okay, let's
comments,
react to the comments.
Those are comments while they like.
The oh yeah, of... yeah. Let's react to the comments on Spotify first. Before we move on, we're starting with Finidi George, by the way. I'm sure that is one of your most favorite topics to probably talk about from now. So. Yeah.
All right. Idris says, "Great episode, Sayemi and Sawali. It'd be nice for us to get lighted, Wally."
What did he say?
He said, great episode, Sayemi and Sawali.
Okay. So we are united.
Nice together. It would be nice to be knighted. my dad was a knight of the Methodist Church, by the way. So,
but that doesn't count. Let's move on.
It does. What's wrong with you? Are you okay? I totally enjoyed your insights on the show. I have a question. In your opinion, who are the top 10 greatest European players of all time?
Then now I'm deep.
Very deep.
Of all time.
And it will divide a lot of opinions. Let me see.
That's a very, very exhausting conversation to really delve into. It is very exhausting. It could have been better if he had maybe helped us with saying who are the best European players of the 21st century, or let's say even from 2000 down to date, or maybe the best European players of the 90s. But saying of all time, man. But I know that whatever we are doing, Alfredo Di Stefano has to be there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, Di Stefano is both Argentine and Spaniard.
Yeah, but he made his name. He made his name in Europe, right? And he made his name. He played for the Spanish national team, actually.
Yeah.
I think he even played for both national teams. Yeah.
He played for both national teams.
Yeah, but because he played for Spain, we'll put him in this list. I'm going to have Michel Platini on this list as well.
Definitely.
Right? Yeah. So I've dropped two. Drop your own two again.
You have Zidane and Paul Scholes.
Please, can we just rest with this Paul Scholes step, please? I don't think Paul Scholes step there.
The greatest midfielder of his own generation. What are you talking about?
You've not seen me put Patrick Vieira in this list. You've already put Paul Scholes in this list.
That's your problem. We put Paul Scholes and Patrick Vieira in the same conversation, I beg.
Oh my lord. Okay. I think I'm gonna have Zidane here.
Definitely.
I'm gonna have Marco van Basten as well. Yep. Lothar Matthäus. Lothar Matthäus, Johan Cruyff. I think we've done about 6-7 now. I'm going to also put in Gianluigi Buffon.
Yes.
Because the goalkeeper has to be in here. And I'm going to go with two goalkeepers, actually. Because, I mean, we have to give credit to the goalkeepers. Every time we do lists like this, it is always filled up with...
Yeah.
So I'm going to put... I'm going to put Gigi Buffon and... I'm torn in between Iker Casillas and Manuel Neuer. I think Manuel Neuer has been the best goalkeeper in the world for a very long time. And because of injuries, he's been out for a while. But his comeback this season has shown that he's still the best goalkeeper in the world.
But you won't put Oliver Kahn anywhere
there. Oliver Kahn, he won the World Cup, right? But I think Manuel Neuer also won the World Cup. Kahn didn't even win the World Cup.
No, he didn't.
Kahn didn't even win the World Cup. Neuer did, right?
Yeah.
Manuel Neuer did. So I think Manuel Neuer takes it. Yeah, Manuel Neuer takes it. just for the sake of putting two goalkeepers in this list. So we're left with, I think, two more names. We already have Lothar Matthäus in there. It's really tough.
It's a tough proposition.
Yeah, it's really, really tough. There's also Cristiano Ronaldo, who is European as well.
Yes, true.
Yeah, and final one. It won't be bad to also have Javi in here, although our list is midfield heavy.
It's middle heavy. The only striker we have so far is Van Basten, and then Ronaldo.
Oh yeah, so I think I'm going to substitute Xavi immediately and put Thierry Henry there. I'm going to do Thierry Henry. The greatest player in the biggest league, or the best league in Europe.
That's a joke, Wale. Yeah, I know that's
yes,
a joke.
No, that's it's not a joke. It is consensus.
Is consensus from who?
It is consensus that the greatest player to have ever played or graced the Premier League is
the Premier League. I'm sorry, I don't agree. That's a joke. A big joke.
Anyways, we are sounding like how did it talk? This is becoming a recurring. We're sounding like broken records. So we've had this conversation.
We've had it before. So, we've had it on this podcast. We've had it on radio. I'm sorry. You know, Jen, go Wale.
Yeah, and when you have been told to bring forth your candidate, you always give me Ryan Giggs, that I don't agree.
And I've also I've confidently told you that Thierry Henry cannot even lace the boots of Eric Cantona in the Premier League.
Oh wow! But you've also forgotten. I always say it that greatness in sports, not even only football, greatness in sports, and even greatness in everything we do in life. It's not about the laurels that you win. Sometimes it can be how transformational it was.
Cantona,
it wasn't transformational from the Premier League. Henry
was transformational.
Henry transcended the Premier League.
Cantona was so transformational. He won two titles with two teams in the Premier League.
That is not transformational I'm talking about. I'm talking about the guy that comes in and the elegance, the panache, the kind of goals he scored.
Goals Cantona scored, Cantona didn't score any fantastic goals.
And by the way, Henry is a World Cup winner. Can I also chip that into it?
Oh, I thought you said Lawrence are not that important.
No, I said chip that in.
I thought Lawrence were not important.
I didn't say Lawrence are not important. I only said that. I'm only saying that greatness can be more than Laurel. I didn't say that it's not about Laurels.
In the same breath, you not chips as individual in Laurel.
If you're even throwing Ryan Giggs at me, I understand. Maybe he has won. How many Premier League? I think 13 PL titles. Yeah, 13 Prems. But that itself, United fans don't even think that Giggs is the greatest player in the Premier League history.
Two Champions League trophies at Manchester United. If you are saying anything, please.
This conversation has been put to vote in different spheres, and Henry has always come out.
And those spheres are dominated by the delusional people that dominate that.
So you think the Arsenal fans are much more than United fans?
Just go and watch the Today Young's video. It tells you everything about that poll that you say tilt to orange.
Let's read the next comment on
Twitter. Mamuyewa. All right. Next one is from Ayo. Ayo is writing from Poland. So Ayo, thank you for.
Oh wow, that's massive, man.
Yeah, it says, hello, and quick question. What do you guys think about Xavi's overall performance as manager of Barca? Putting into consideration, he has a 16-year-old kid as one of his mainstays of his team. Wale, please, you'll be the one to comment on this one. You know they've said I have an agenda against Barcelona.
Oh, yeah, you do. You actually do.
God,
you actually do. Okay. All right. I think Xavi has done a great job, maybe not great job, but he's done a decent job. I mean, Xavi comes to Barcelona in his first season and wins them the league. I mean, that itself is, you know, that's a commendable job to do. And it's been unfair, the kind of criticism is faced. Don't also forget that in this period, Barcelona have had to move away from the Camp Nou and play at the Olympic Stadium in Montjuïc. And they've had to adjust. And it takes a while for you to adjust to those unfamiliar surroundings. I understand this season has been somewhat of... I think they found a way to rescue this season. They found a way to rescue it. And in that period where they're trying to rescue it, Xavi said, hey, I'm done. I can't take this bullshit anymore. I don't think the fans respect me enough. I also don't think that the Barcelona hierarchy give me credit for things that I've done. I mean, this is the Barcelona side trying to also rediscover its DNA, its identity with young players, with a blend of experience. Under Xavi, I think Lewandowski also came in. Lewandowski was supposed to be their franchise player. He was supposed to be the guy that should be a role model to the younger players. If that has worked, I don't really know. But his numbers also are not bad. And I mean, since Xavi announced that he was leaving, they found a way to rescue their season. They've only lost once or twice. And the only game they did lose was in the Champions League and in the Clásico. And these are games that there's no shame in losing. Although you get a feeling that in the PSG game, they press the self-destruct button because they're comfortable from the first leg.
But that loss against
and in the Clásico. Yeah, the loss against Girona. Yeah, but that loss against Girona even came, you know, before Xavi announced that he was going to leave at the end of the season. So I think that Barca have had an okay season. I think they finished second in the league, which is respectable. I also thought they met their targets in the Champions League from a financial standpoint, because I understand that Barcelona also already spent, they already accounted for their Champions League money based on the fact that they hoped that they were going to get to semi-final or the quarter-final, and they did. So, financially, they seem to have also recovered some good money from the Champions League. They might not still be in a good place from a fiscal point of view. They also have issues with Lewandowski's future. They're in a very difficult situation. Now, Lewa has got, I think, a year left on his contract. Two. But interestingly, when he goes into next season, he will become the highest paid player at Barcelona at 16 million euros annually, you know, after tax. Now, what do you do with this kind of player who has got only 1 year left on his contract and is going to be your highest paid player? Do you sell him or do you keep him? If you sell him, what plans do you have? Okay, you've got Ferran Torres, who is on number 9. He will not get you the goals. Then you've brought in Victor Roque from Brazil, whose adaptation has not really worked at all. Yeah. It has not worked at all. So do you want to take that point, sir, Lewandowski, and trust Roque and Ferran Torres next season? Or sell Lewandowski and bring in another big-name striker who you probably cannot afford? So it leaves them in a very, very...
And pull another lever.
Yeah, exactly. So it leaves them in a very, very interesting situation. So now that Xavi has decided to stay, you know, it gives them a bit of stability. But Xavi also must realize that this decision to stay, I hope it doesn't come back to haunt him. Yes, I hope it doesn't come. Because football fans, especially fans of Barcelona, they are fickle-minded. They are enjoying the moment. But the moment it turns out again, they start baying for blood. They start asking for your head. I mean, look at what's happening at Bayern Munich. Suddenly, there's the petition to keep Tuchel for next season.
Yeah.
This was a guy that they wanted out, you know, by all means, after Leverkusen, you know, took the title away from them. So I think Xavi has to be very careful what he has gone into right now. But I think, as I said, I think he's had an okay season. If you win the league title your first season, come second in your second season, get to the Champions League quarterfinal in that second season as well, I'll give him a solid B.
Okay. Tibugi writes, says, yes, Grimsby survived after winning their last home game. Grimsby is in League Two. I English for So Wale's team is a division higher. Wish you guys could be dropping at least 2 pods weekly. I've replied T Boogie. If we get the sponsors we are looking for,
it's not easy recording. Because our schedules have to align.
Yeah.
But if the sponsorship is there, but it's a must, our schedules will align.
Oh yes, our schedules will definitely align. The sponsorship is there. We just got a long email from Adewole Bello, a regular listener and
that's a regular as well.
Yeah, contributor on the it's a long one. So let me try and get through it.
Let's have it.
He says, good evening, Mr. Wale and Mr. Yemi. I titled this piece, What They Are Looking For, They Will Find. Either positive or negative. I know it is more of negative. Might be long. Please indulge me. To West Ham fans, what are they looking for in Amore? They will find you. Because I don't know what Moyes has done wrong for a team of their status. To Xavi, that disgrace is looking for from Barcelona fans, he will find. Just leave on a high. No, we just discussed that now. To Liverpool, what are they looking for in Slot? They will find. They seem not to have learned anything from signing the Dutch group. Since Ten Hag and MFC, the ball at Palace, they were all doing well, but that's just their level. To Nigeria class of 94, NFF, what they are looking for in a Nigerian coach, they will find. A coach you won't support, a coach you won't give adequate backroom staff, a coach you won't pay on time. What's the essence? What is the body of work of Finidi? Class of 94 is synonymous to NUFC class of 92. They feel no one is better than them. When they ruin this chance again, I hope their body will calm down. To me, I feel we have gotten to ahead to fail again in Super Eagles after that second position. It should be higher, but no, I said that we will say we should just forget 2026 World Cup. What Milan are looking for in Lopetegui, they will find though. If Ineos don't sack Ten Hag, that crew they are looking for, it will take them to that depth. What Sporting Lagos is looking for in Bifo, they will find. I want to highlight the defense was so porous. If Rangers or Eibar catch them in Lagos, they will take a draw away, and the players look naive in defending. The second part of this piece is my rant and opinion. Now, wow. I didn't bet on Wrexham, replying to the last time I messaged. I'm just a concerned fan. I became a strong fan after watching Welcome to Wrexham Season 1, and I keyed into the vision. I love success. So happy they are promoted. Let them just improve the squad and aim for playoff spot next season. Most likely promote after 2 years in League 1 because it must not be sudden as it was in League 2. They need to mature before going to the Championship and else they might crumble. Tenax is the worst game management coach I've ever known. They say only a fool does things the same way and expect a result. Tenax tops it. Since the game against Wolves on day one this season, till now, same leaky midfield. But no, he won't do something. Mo said in 2019, he won't be leading you by 2 to 3 goals in this year's semi, and you will collapse. They have crumbled at Ajax to poach Spurs, and then NMFC did not see those signs. This season alone, it's been worse at game management. If my score 10, be sure that the opponent can score at 12 if they apply pressure. If he is still there next season, then Ineos are not ready. His transfer has been the worst. He scored 54 goals last season, but no, the year that won Golden Glove was your problem. But no, the year that won the Golden Glove was your problem, not goal scoring. Only to sign Eropo Ronana, who is gunning for over 80 goals considering the season. Antonio of 100 million, scoring one goal each in every competition. Imagine how highest goal scorer being McTominay. He will complain of injuries, but have you ever noticed those injuries don't have names? They are sick, they are unavailable. Malaysia, etc. Arsenal have tried enough after Spurs win on Sunday. I want them to win the EPL now. But City's crazy, and that Villa loss will be costly. English vibes rubbish has been unfair to MEFC this season. See the handball shout against Burnley compared to what was against Coventry. Why is England doing this? Any reason why they operate VAR that way? Osele has been quiet lately on social media. I hope he's using that time to get better as a striker and better as a penalty taker. Chelsea scored the penalty at the weekend. In your opinion, where is the better place to go, Arsenal or PSG? Finally, if Remo can't win any away match or pray, Lafina Ladaimba already has played draw, no league for them. Thank you so much for indulging me. Up Wrexham, up Leverkusen, up Remo. That's Adewale Bello. That's a long one.
Okay, man, this is a mouthful. This is a long, long one. And I'm going to make sure that we react to everything. So this is what you're going to do. We'll take it from the bottom, and we'll take it from bottom up top. Because I like the whole, whatever they are looking for, they will see.
They will find.
I can understand those sentiments, but there are also some of those, whatever they are looking for, that they will not see.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start from the bottom. Bottom is Remo Stars, right?
Yeah.
Okay, some reprieve came for Remo Stars. Yes, I don't know how much of a help it is, but the NFL Disciplinary Board has taken 2 points away from Aimba. So they are now so they are now level on points with Aimba on 53, but they are 4 points behind Rangers. But they have a game in hand, and it's against Rivers United.
That's a big advantage. 4 points in the NFL is a big advantage.
Yes. So, but if you are going to surmount that 4 points, if you're a Remo Stars, you'll have to win away from home.
Yeah.
You'll have to win away from home. And here's the good news or bad news. At least you have a month to prepare for sticking on time in the league. So you can treat it as good news, or you can treat it as bad news, depending on what club you support. Okay.
Yeah.
Remo Stars, what's next again?
Osimhen.
PSG or Arsenal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Osimhen fits it at Arsenal.
I don't think so.
And apart from Shama, let me see. Yeah, he might fit in there. He might fit in there. But I also don't see PSG as a very, very suitable destination. You know, because Osimhen loves running into the channels. I think that PSG have players who can also do that. They might just sort of utilize them a lot. Randall Kolo Muani, Gonzalo Ramos. Yeah, so they have players like that. You know, so are you going to keep three strikers on the bench because they're PSG? I don't really know. So I don't think Arsenal, PSG, anyone fits in. So that's done. Do you agree with me on that?
No, I agree with you.
All right, let's move on to the next one.
PSG is the more likely one, but the type of striker is the kind of way he likes to play compared to the way we know Enrique likes his team to play. It doesn't look like it's a good fit.
I mean, if PSG also go ahead and get Rafael Leão, who is more of an individualist player, trust me, there's going to be clashes between Leão and Osimhen thrives on fan service.
And also, I do not think PSG will want to make two big transfers in summer window. I don't think so.
I agree.
The financial fair play regulations don't.
I agree. All right, what's the next one?
Yeah, English VAR.
Okay, English VAR. I mean, we've always done how controversial it has always been. The problem we've always had, I think we both agree that it's consistency in the application of VAR. Did you watch our Webb's comments yesterday? Finally admitting that Forest should have gotten a penalty against Burnley at least one. Against Everton. Sorry. He finally admitted to that. I don't know how that helps.
Not yet, Forest.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
But He now quickly added to it that we should also remember that referees are human beings. But he's also forgotten to remember that VAR was also meant to come and help these human beings to make correct decisions.
Not to make mistakes. Yes, not to make mistakes.
Yeah. So that's a very shitty comment, because Evangelos Marinakis will ask himself, or will ask Aldweb, how does your comment on Sky Sport, how does he help me?
How does it change the point
value of the league? It doesn't change anything. By the way, do you remember last time we recorded and I told you that Forrest post on Twitter was being engineered by the owner of Nottingham Forest, and he said no, it was from Plattenberg. I wanted to send an article to you, but I forgot. The article on the Daily Mail chronicled how Premier League owners were using that X platform to put out a lot of their comments, and Marinakis was number one in there. And they had to come back to talk about the fact that Marinakis, in fact, I told you that last episode, Marinakis' original comments for what happened against Everton were strongly worded that they had to beg him to tone it down.
Yeah.
You know, they have to beg him to tone it down. So, I hope they escape relegation. I think that I've changed my mind. I think Luton are going down. Luton have not shown enough fight.
The last
couple of games, yeah, they haven't shown it. So that might just be the lifeline for Forest. All right, the next one.
All right, it says Arsenal have tried enough as Spurs. And
I think we'll talk Arsenal later on. Yeah, we'll talk Arsenal later, right? So we can address that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we now goes to Ten Hag.
Oh, that's your 40, right?
That's my 40. Okay, yeah. So very simply, it is broken and it needs to be fixed. At some point I thought maybe the Ineos guys might decide to let him run out his contract, which means he has 1 year left on his deal from summer, instead of paying a £15 million compensation. And then look at the desire of building the back office first, or front office, like some people call it, and see what happens against appointing a new manager. But unfortunately, that my thought process has changed. I think it's time for Ten Hag to go. I think it's time we get a new manager. And I'm actually actively pushing for Thomas Tuchel, who, as based on what the rumor mill says, I think in terms of structure, I think Tuchel will bring about a better structure to United, and also probably able to attract some type of players. And then with the structure behind him, they're able to do some better deals. Shambolic, United are shambolic defensively. Midfield is zero. There's really nothing.
Did you catch his comments after the game against Burnley about United being one of the most entertaining sides?
Entertaining, but can't keep their bomb shots.
So you think United are entertaining?
No, United play some good stuff, but...
No, please. No, please, miss me with that.
Calm down.
Miss me with that, please.
But there's no point playing good stuff if you are not compact, if you are not well-structured, if you can't...
Yeah, let's be very...
Calm down. For all the good stuff City play, City are very solid. You can't play good stuff and be structureless and be an open road, as good as the coastal road.
Let me give you a list of teams who play better and good stuff than United in the Prem. Fulham do. Only the Glasner has come to Crystal Palace and they are playing some good stuff. That's good stuff.
Palace are playing some good stuff. True.
Yeah. Spurs are playing some good stuff. They are playing some great football that United will never dream of playing in this period. Let me see once again. Villa are playing good stuff. I know you agree with me on that, right? United are only entertaining because they are chaotic. They are not entertaining because they are playing good stuff.
Yeah, so that means there's United, entertainment in the chaos.
United are entertaining because a bottom side like
the excitement. The
United are entertaining because a bottom side, they might take a 2-0 lead against them, and in the last 10 minutes, it might end 2-2. That's the entertainment that United are offering. and it is useless entertainment. They are not entertaining because they are playing good football. You know, they are not playing shit. That's the truth. Is it what Anthony does? Or Marcus Rashford does? No, tell me now.
I've told you.
So, United...
There's excitement. You mentioned that there's excitement in the chaos. So take the excitement. Leave the chaos.
Anyways, we're done with an ad. It doesn't deserve all of our time. Let's move to the next one.
Next one is Wrexham.
Oh, Wrexham in League One. Yeah, we talked about that a couple of episodes ago. And we talk about them consistently on the pod, how they have gotten here because of intentionality of the owners, who have been very professional in the way they've handled the club. Recruitment also has been good. I have to admit that Wrexham are also flexing their financial muscles. They have the best players. Oh, yeah, of course, man. They have the best players in League Two.
Yeah.
That's the truth. You know, they have some of the best players, experienced players. If you have Paul Mullen in your squad and the rest, you should be getting promotion. So they're in League One. It gets tougher again for them. And I think they will recruit more again because they have money. They also made some profits.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah. They've been declaring some profits as well. So it's just a matter it's a matter of when, not if, they will get to the championship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I think that they might stall a bit in the championship. The championship is very tough to
stay in. Crazy.
Yeah, they might stall, but also that is not a criticism of what is of them if they stall in the championship. It won't be.
It's just the magnitude of the job in front of them.
Yeah. But credit to them. They are milking all of this commercially.
Oh, yes.
You know, and that's really good to see. And I also understand now that these days Wrexham are one of the most populous teams in America.
Oh, yes.
I think they are going back there again for preseason. They had mad crowds last year. Last year was a shutdown.
It was a huge success.
So I think they want to leverage on and consolidate this season as well in the United States. Yeah, so I credit to them. Next one.
Sporting Lagos.
Okay, we've gotten to the part of what they are looking for, Abi.
Yeah.
All right. We already talked about Sporting last week, right?
Yeah, last episode.
Yeah, Yemi is not happy that Paul Ofor has left. Yeah. I am happy that they've taken advantage of bringing in an experienced manager in B4, who lost his first game, but responded with an emphatic win. Do I call it emphatic? That's why I said I was dilly-dallying on the word emphatic. And the crucial moment of that game was the save from the penalty save at 2-2, I think. Okay, yeah. I think it was 2-2. If he doesn't save that penalty and Abel score, it's Abel going 3-2 ahead. He saves it and Sporting Lagos going to win 4-2. It was a very crucial moment in that game. And I mean, Uwoke is one player that in the couple of seasons has come to our.
Was invited for the AFCON. He was in the initial list.
He's making a name for himself. I'm happy for him.
I think he's a good goalkeeper.
He's making a name for himself. So it says Sporting, if they meet Edinburgh and Rivers United, and blah, blah, blah. I think they've played these two teams so many ways already.
No, they haven't, though.
I think they haven't played Edinburgh. They have Edinburgh Rangers.
They haven't played Edinburgh Rangers, yeah.
Trust me, I think that I can put some money on it. I think Sporting will beat either of them in Lagos. Maybe not both, but they'll find a way to get a win against. I think they'll win one.
One of them. I don't know which one to be, but I think they can beat one of them.
Yeah, I think they can win one of them. Yeah. So, what's the next one again?
Well, we've already spoken about Ten Hag, so let's move to the next one.
Yeah, next one. Yeah.
Milan and Lopetegui.
Okay, I don't know. Let me let you have a go on that. Let you lead on that, and I'll contribute my comments.
Okay, so it's a strange one. And why do I see it strange? People also need to realize that sometimes managers, like every human being, managers also face ups and downs. I think for Lopetegui, the situation at Wolves was a down. Sometimes what led to his dismissal at Sevilla was also a bit of a downtime. But it doesn't take away the fact that he's a good manager. However, for Milan, it's interesting that it's looking like that is the choice as against some of the other people that have been linked to them. And I'm talking Conte, I'm talking Sarri, and, you know, I was saying, why not go all in for those two? But then you realize that Milan also don't have money to spend. Anybody that's going to take on Conte, you need to have money to spend. Milan don't have that kind of money to spend. Likewise, Sarri as well, because the reason Sarri left Lazio obviously has to do with the fact that Lazio also came back in financially. So Lopetegui has shown that he can actually manage instances where teams can spend money. And I'm talking Sevilla, I'm also talking Wolves. So I think that is where Milan are tilting in that direction, because he probably fits the bill with respect to what it is they can afford in terms of, you know, the mercato. So we have to wait and see if that eventually happens. But I think it's certain that Pioli is gone, just the same way Allegri is on his way out at Juventus. So I think that's my take on that one. We'll have to wait to see what happens when he joins Milan, but it just means that Inter and then at some point Napoli might be the two front runners for next season.
All right. You want to know my thoughts on this? Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah,
I can. All right. I think the Milan hierarchy might want Lopetegui, but it is very, very clear that the fans don't want Lopetegui. Now, even the stakeholders, you know, ex-Milan players, they are strongly against this. I mean, you might call this, what do we call this thing happens in South Africa? When they don't want their foreigners, they say the foreigners are coming to steal their jobs.
Xenophobia.
You might see it as xenophobic, but it isn't. What a lot of people need to realize is that Italy is a very insular football country.
Yeah.
The way some pundits in Italy talk about the game, it is as if football is on the other side of the Alps.
Oh, yes.
They call it Calcio Europeo, as if Italy was not part of the European Union. Now,
yeah,
there are facts to back this up. Italy is a very peculiar country of football. Now, 18 of Serie A's 20 clubs this season, they are all led by coaches with Italian passports.
Yeah.
It is not by coincidence. It is by design.
Yeah.
The only exceptions are the guys at Torino and the guy at Lazio, Tudor and Juric. And even these two guys have spent over a decade, if not close to that,
in
their playing careers in Italy. So basically, to make it in Italy as a foreign manager, you either have to be familiar with the locals or you have to be an undisputed superstar. And is Lopetegui any of this? Is Lopetegui any of this? Not at all. Now let's look at the coaches that have won, you know, the coaches have, because I'm looking at the numbers about, I don't have my numbers right, but I think I'm close to being right here. Since the Second World War, only 13 coaches from outside Italy have won the Serie A. Now, only two of those 13 have done it since the turn of the century, basically since the year 2000. And we know them, Goran Eriksson. Goran Eriksson at Lazio and Jose Mourinho. And even with Eriksson, remember that he had, a lot of people don't know that they think Eriksson was just Lazio. No, Eriksson was known, he had stint at Sampdoria, Fiorentina, Roma, you know, before doing Lazio. So he knew the terrain very well. And Jose Mourinho, it was Jose Mourinho, a superstar. Once again, is Lopetegui in the silk or hilk of any of these two managers I've mentioned? Not at all. So technically, foreign managers don't do well in the Serie A. And that is the premise at which Milanistas are saying, see, we don't really, really want this guy. And the Italian coaching school, Sef Covaciano, they are a very proud school.
Very proud.
They are more like, what can we learn? They are not like, what can we learn from Guardiola? It's like, let's teach people like Guardiola a lesson. That's the way they think.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
They are not rich Guardiola.
You know what is funny about what you said? Even in my Calcio group, you know, when some conversations come up, I'm like, why are you people talking like this? Jonathan, why do you guys have this kind of opinion? Do you get? So someone like me that likes the Calcio but has more of a Premier League upbringing, you know, it's always a big stack, you know, a complete contrast from what I'm used to. So I'm like, why are you guys talking in this vein? Why are you looking at things from this perspective? So you make a very valid point.
Oh, yeah. Foreign coaches in Italy, they have to work doubly hard to prove themselves. Luis Enrique at Roma. They spat him out after one season. You know, he said he was exhausted. Ronald de Boer, remember at Inter Milan, they mocked him. Especially go they mix English and Spanish. You know, and once again, to talk to the Italian pride in coaching, the fact that after no nationality has had more different winners of the Premier League than Italy.
Yeah.
Do you know that? They have four winners. Ancelotti, Conte,
Ranieri.
Ranieri. And who else again is that? I think... Who's the fourth one? No. They have four.
Ancelotti, Ranieri. Who's the fourth one?
I think... Did Ancelotti win twice with Chelsea?
Once. Won a double.
Yeah. So...
Won the double first season...
And even Ancelotti is the most successful coach in Champions League history. Yeah. In fact, he has won all five of Europe's top five domestic leagues.
True.
As we are going to the Euros again, we have four Italian coaches. Guy Calzona
at
Slovakia, Hungary has an Italian manager. Turkey has an Italian manager, Italy obviously. You know, so they have that pride, but. For Milan, I'm now thinking, what do they now do with this managerial situation? Do they cave in and hire an Italian? You've mentioned Conte. You've mentioned Sarri.
I think Conte is going to Napoli.
But with Sarri, I don't think they see Sarri as their guy, considering his links with Juventus as well, you know. But
it doesn't matter. That does not matter. Content won't be an option.
Now, let me. I came across an interesting Calcio piece a couple of days ago, and it was on this Milan situation as well. And the writer was saying that maybe Milan have to categorize the kind of managers that they want in terms of number one, maybe the manager has to be like an ideologue innovator. Mm. So when we talk about innovators, we're talking about Arrigo Sacchi.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about managers in that mode, or you also look at a coach who is you can call him a physique du role. So when I mean physique du role here, is a trait that Galliani used to feel was important when they were appointing managers. I mean somebody that has gravitas, somebody that has broad shoulders, somebody that can command authority. I know who I'm talking about. Allegri is a kind of that is that kind of person. That was the kind of person they appointed back then. I'm not saying they should bring back Allegri. I'm only saying that Allegri was that kind of figure that Milan had when they appointed him. If you remember back in 2010.
Not now.
Yeah, not now anymore. I think it's washed off. And domestically, Allegri became the most dominant Italian coach of his generation.
Oh, yes.
In fact, Allegri was like an agenda for the Italian press to carry. Do you remember the season when Jose Mourinho won the league? That he was supposed to win coach of the year. They didn't give him. They gave Allegri. Yes, sir. and another thing with foreign managers that, see, that Italian press will chew you. They finished Mourinho. Mourinho accused them of, he called them intellectual prostitution.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, because they love their own.
Their pride is well-founded.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is.
It's clear. They show working. The body of work is there. You cannot now come from outside and come and believe that you get mad. You not come to Italy. They will pieces you. That's why I know a lot of Italian football fans who can't wait for Pep to come to Italy. Right? They can't wait for it. They are hoping that he makes a mistake. And you know, there was a time it was heavily linked to Juventus.
Mm-hmm. You
know? Yeah. So they are hoping that it comes because they feel that, look, if you can do anything in any other place in Europe, if you come to Italy, we will make sure you are grounded.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Make sure you are humble. You know, so that's what they did to Mourinho, and they've done it to a lot of foreign managers, right? And it takes a lot of balls to cope with that kind of pressure.
Yeah, I mean, can we pitch about some Italian managers that are not Conte and Sarri to Milan? Let's see.
I think the only one I have is Italiano at Fiorentina.
No, I don't think so. You know who comes to mind for me?
Who?
Andre Pirlo.
No, they, I don't think so.
Andre Pirlo has.
I mean,
He's having a good time at Sampdoria. Have you seen what he's doing at Sampdoria?
Yeah, I saw what he's doing at Sampdoria.
He had a rough start, but he has steadied the ship, and I think they're on the brink of promotion.
Yeah, they can try him out.
There's also Roberto De Zerbi. But the only problem with Zerbi is that Zerbi is seen as an innovator.
Yes.
Now, the problem with Zerbi is that he's like Guardiola-esque, right? And one of the evaluators for the coach's job at Milan is going to be Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I don't think Zlatan will buy any of those bullshit that Zerbi will be saying. Yeah.
And also, I think a lot of Calcio followers think that Zerbi is just riding on a wave, the Premier League hype wave. They don't think he's ripe enough for a big job. So, you know, it was also linked to Juventus at some point. And a lot of guys felt, no, that job is too big for him. And the reason why they're saying so, they feel, yes, he did well at Sassuolo, went to Shakhtar Donetsk, won the league now at Brighton. They feel the process is not, the trajectory is not correct.
Yeah.
Unlike a Motta that was at Spezia, Bologna, they feel okay, the trajectory seems to be fine for Motta because he will get a good structure to support him at Juventus, to support his ideas and his, you know. So I think
Milan missed out on Motta. I think they missed out on Motta because Motta is going to Juventus, I hear. If they had moved swiftly, I think they would have gotten Thiago Motta. But there is one name that comes out again. It won't generate the same hype as Conte or De Zerbi. But you know who I'm talking about? Leo coach, Paulo Fonseca.
Ah.
Now, so Fonseca speaks Italian. He has managed in the most scrutinized media market in the country.
Was Roma.
Yeah. And at Roma, remember, he had the terrible sporting director who... Monchi was terrible at Roma. Yeah, Monchi was terrible at Roma. It was terrible. Monchi wasted their Champions League money now.
He's showing work in Avila now.
I know, but you know that Monchi earned a lot of money from Roma getting to the semi-final of the Champions League that year.
Yeah,
and they wasted that money. But Fonseca, his style of play, his work with young players, I think it matches up with what Milan are looking for. You know, so... Maybe Paulo Fonseca. And actually, do you know who is endorsing Fonseca as well? Fabio Capello. Fabio Capello. Yeah.
Okay.
And Capello's words carry a lot of weight.
Oh, well, of course.
Yeah, because Capello is saying that Fonseca knows Italy. And why don't you just give the job to him? So, yeah, maybe Fonseca. But this Lopetegui thing, trust me, it is going to end in failure. It is going to end in failure. Yeah. Because, I mean, you come to the club and you're already at a handicap because the fans don't like you.
Yeah, that's a big no-no.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I think we've exhausted a lot of time on Milan, but it was nice to talk some Calcio, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Next up, Nigeria class of 94.
Okay, so that leads us to discussing Finidi George, right? How about we just take that heads on, and I would like to know your thoughts on Finidi. The NFF says that he can also appoint his assistant, but Victor Ekpeba was caught on SuperSport a couple of days ago saying what we all know, and I don't know why people are reacting oddly to it. And what did Ekpeba said? Ekpeba said, this guy was not our first choice. We've only appointed Finidi because we cannot afford a foreign manager. True. And I don't see any big deal in that.
Yeah, that's not a big deal. We've known this position from the get-go. And you see, it's just Nigeria is just a very funny place. It's a funny country with agenda ruling over common sense. You know? And that's the country we find ourselves in. So you find people who are already wishing for Finidi to fail.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a good way to go. He was my choice to be appointed as coach, since we knew that we were not going to get it. We can't afford to pay for another manager, for a foreign manager. And for continuity's sake, I felt it's a good choice. It's a good person to fall back on. Now, what is important is that we have to give him the support that he needs. Please pay him on time. Let him have the backroom staff in it.
Paying. Do you even know how much they are paying him? It's just pay him on time. Did you ever tell you how much they are paying?
That's what I'm saying. That we don't even know the kind of contract he's going to sign. How many years is it? Is it a project? What kind of project is it? Are you going to support this project fully? And I don't want Lebelo ask us here that what is Finidi's body of work? He's currently champion of the MPFL. Like it or not, that's a difficult league to win. Whether you want to agree with me or not, it's a difficult league to win. Why? Because the quality between all the teams in the league is not that different. It's not that much. The bar is not that high in terms of quality across the league, in terms of playing personnel. So his body of work is he's earned it by winning the league. What else? Look, let's just support the guy and give him the back. I know some people have sharpened their knives already. They're waiting for the slightest chance of failure or slightest blip in the work. Now, note that he has a very difficult task to qualify for the 2026 World Cup already.
Yes, sir.
Because
yes,
we are two games into that qualification series that we have 2 points. He's not going to come out and tell you I was not the coach. Yes, he was part of the backroom staff of that tenor that started that work. So the other solution is to step up and what's the word now? Rescue that campaign immediately. So let's just give him the support he needs. Leave agenda and just support the guy. That's all.
Well, speaking of support, will you support Finidi if he brings Yema as assistant?
Time and time again, we have seen coaches bring people that they've worked with, that they know, that feel understand how they want to work, to be part of their backroom staff. Yema is
the Super Eagles is higher calling. The Super Eagles is higher calling.
No, I was even going to say, Yema is already part of the under-17 structure, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Unless that has changed, right? But I think he needs more experience, more know-how as part of his backroom staff. But then, there's nothing wrong in giving a young man an opportunity, right? If he feels Yema can work well with him, if he feels he has what it takes, let's just give this guy a chance. Let's give him a chance. That's just my take.
I want to believe that the duration of Finidi's contract is tied to qualifying for the World Cup.
And the AFCON.
So that is why it's very I'm surprised that a new NFF that wants to show that we are a departure from the old guard, cannot do things differently. But hey, it's same of the same. Let's be very honest.
It's same of the same.
You know, you announce a coach, don't announce the duration of his contract, how much he's earning. you know, make all of this open. This is not typical. It's not a typical.
It's typical. People that don't announce how much their commercial deals are. You don't announce how much they pay the code. So that tomorrow, people can hold them in the blockers that they don't pay the man.
I also think that Finidi has to, another challenge in front of him is this, our obsession with our style of play. Can he fulfill the obsession and play sexy football and at the same time win games?
We don't have a style of play.
No, I thought you people complain about how the footballer that Raw and Tesero was sterile.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
That you want something fluid.
It's a developmental problem from the get-go. Do you understand? So that style of play thing, we put it aside. Look, where we are today, and once entertainment is good, it's good to watch good football. Well, if you play good football from now to tomorrow and they beat you, when they see Saki?
They'll say that at least they played well now. Because I can't understand this whole we should play expansive football, 4-3-3, blah, 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 blah.
Baba, leave story. If you play expansive football from now to tomorrow and they knock you, the same people that talked about the advice are the first people that carry placard and they should fire you. So, Baba, let's just win. Let's just win and sort out. The problem is developmental. It's from the ground. Build the ground up. You're not going to sort it out from Super Eagles level. That's the bottom line.
All right. What's the next? What they're looking for, they shall find?
Liverpool. And their slots.
Yeah. Okay. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the reputation of Dutch coaches is taking a battle.
all thanks to
Ten Hag, De Boer, and the likes. But this is it. I think what Liverpool have just done is that they just wanted to get somebody who's ready, available, who's willing to move, and not get into the mess of dragging the process of getting a manager for too long. I think that's why they made this choice. I think the man has done a good job at Feyenoord. He's brought through some really decent, good-looking players who are young from the Dutch system. I think what Liverpool need to do here is also have the mindset of what they did with Klopp. They need to give him time. It's a project. They need to be willing to invest in that project. But a lot will also depend on the players that may remain in the current Liverpool project, right? A lot also depend on how vulnerable other teams may see Liverpool as in terms of coming to pick some of their more illustrious players. So we're already talking about rumors of players like Trent Alexander-Arnold being looked at by teams like Real Madrid. You can never discount the Saudi link on Salah. Whether they announced just recently that he will stay, that's a story. If somebody shows them good money, I'm sure Liverpool will sell Salah tomorrow. And that's what typical of the FSG. They will take the money. So we just have to wait and see what kind of job he does.
I'm surprised that they didn't go all in for Ruben Amorim. And I think that Ruben Amorim is a much more accomplished manager than Slot. Now, I know that Slot won the title last season. Yeah, and the only reason why he even didn't defend it this season is because PSV have been on steroids.
They've been
on steroids this season. And actually, Feyenoord have only lost once this season. Yeah. I think
and
once or twice.
Really bad. And that's really, you know, bad.
Yeah, and in all of this, they've also won the cup, you know, a couple of weeks ago. But I think that Ruben Amorim, as a manager, even with the Laurels, Amorim also won the league and defended it. He's about to defend it right now in the Portuguese Primera. That was like back-to-back league titles for Sporting. So that's why I was surprised that Liverpool really did, because the report was that Liverpool were never interested in Amorim. All of that talk was just a figment of the imagination of certain sections of the media. And Amorim was more closer to West Ham, getting West Ham, than even Liverpool. And I think he came to West Ham. Maybe talks didn't go according to plan. He had to apologize to the Portuguese media and apologize to Sporting fans that it was really a bad decision to have left, you know, for England in the midst of their season. But I think Amorim was the better fit. Although, for the style of football Liverpool want to play, that is heavy metal. You know, bang, 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 bang. I don't think Amorim is that. Amorim is more measured. You know, it's more measured, you know.
That's why,
much more calculative.
That's why the choice of Xabi Alonso at some point was a bit...
It's more measured, it's more calculated, but also Liverpool pride themselves as a club that also tries to bring forth a lot of young players. He has a fantastic track record of that. Palinha, Ruben Neves, Diomande, you know, and
the English boy that was signed from Sport, Martin Edwards, if I'm not wrong, his name.
Yeah, Martin Edwards as well. So it was really a head scratcher. Now, trust the English media to try to also push an agenda of their own, but I think this time around, it was a decent agenda that made sense. Now, I read a piece on The Guardian. I think, it was on The Guardian UK, and they were asking questions about if the new sporting director at Liverpool, Richard Hughes, who used to be at Bournemouth, who also used to be a playing partner. I think he played alongside Eddie Howe when Eddie was a player at Bournemouth, and also they worked together when Eddie Howe was manager at Bournemouth as well. If Richard Hughes is now sporting director at Liverpool, and Martin Edwards has moved up as, I think, the CEO now, and also has a good relationship with Eddie Howe, why didn't they really consider Eddie Howe? Now, they're not even saying this on the merit of the relationship that Eddie Howe has with these guys. They also said on the merit of the fact that Eddie Howe has paid his dues in the English game and is one of the brightest minds in the game.
English media.
Now, the truth about that is Eddie Howe a misfit for the Liverpool job? Doesn't it deserve to be mentioned in the vein of the Amorim's and Jan Slot?
No, it can't be mentioned. Those guys have body of work is important now. He hasn't won anything. Amorim has won
because
stuff.
He hasn't won anything because he's in a league that is financially doped by Man City.
It doesn't really matter, Wale. Find your way.
Yemi. If Mikel Arteta was available and Slot and Ruben Amorim, who would you think Liverpool are going to go with?
Between those three?
Yeah.
They've gone with the choice that they want. Arteta hasn't won anything.
No, I know. But I'm only saying that they would give Arteta a very, very, very massive, you know, thought.
Maybe on the premise that he already knew.
But he also hasn't won anything. Are you telling me that Eddie Howe doesn't know the league?
Yes, he does. But
Eddie Howe knows the league better than Arteta.
Yes, but the premise here is very clear. They also want to go for winners, right? And in Slot and Amorim, they have people who have won. Slot had got into the final of the European Conference League, only lost to Mourinho's Roma, right?
They've gone for winners who play in second-rate leagues in Europe.
It happens.
None of these leagues are top five.
Yeah, so these things happen, but Barcelona went for Xavi, who was coached in Qatar.
Xavi is Barcelona himself now.
Whether it's Barcelona himself or not, it doesn't matter. When Chelsea took Jose Mourinho, he had only won the league in Portugal, but then he had Champions League and Europa League to back it up. So, see, some of those things happen. You just see, nobody makes any perfect. There's no decision that is perfect until you take it. Your Arsenal went for Arteta, who was number two at City. Why? On the premise that he's worked with probably the best coach in history, right? I'm feeling that they can be able to tap some of that knowledge and bring some of that expertise on board. That idea is coming to fruition somewhat with potential back-to-back second place finishes, right? So sometimes it's important to get a winner on board. Why did Villa go for Unai Emery? Because he's a winner. And the man is showing that, yes, he can change the premise of a team like Villa, who are a mid-table team, taking them now to potential championship qualification, then the semi-final of an European competition.
Eddie Howe taking Newcastle to the Champions League can also be qualified as him being a winner. It doesn't have to be silverware. Well, did you see Newcastle play Champions League football?
I will continue to tell you this thing. Finishing second, third, or fourth is not a trophy. It's not a winner. You are not so wrong.
It means you can win. You can win. You can win and still become a fraud. You can win and still be a fraud.
I want
to see managers win something and the next thing they become nonsense. Gianpiero Gasperini hasn't won anything, right? But is he not one of the most revered managers in the Italian game? Has he won anything?
He has not won anything. And that's why his name doesn't come up when they're mentioning big jobs. Because his name
is not being mentioned because of the bias against him about what happened at Inter. What happened at Inter?
Yes,
he didn't
ma'am.
Have the bias. Wait, let me tell you what happened at Inter. The owners didn't support him, and the media even derided him for playing three at the back at the big club like Inter. Who plays three at the back these days? Champions of the Serie A. Yeah, exactly.
That's life.
It is an agenda thing.
Jasper
is a big manager, and forget it, he never win anything. I would recommend Jasper Gasperini for any of the big jobs. I was surprised that Milan have not even considered him. You get
he's not in that bracket.
He has not won anything, but who wins anything in a league where there's Man City, who have won four of the last five league titles? Even the Liverpool could only win one.
Yeah.
So who could have won it? But in all of this, he's still taking Newcastle to the Champions League. Now, back to my example about how managers can be winners and still become frauds. Now, this guy takes us to the Champions League and gives us a masterclass on how not to, to clinch onto a Champions spot. Look at Napoli, who are giving us a masterclass on how not to defend the title in Italy.
So you
can win something and at the end, see become a fraud. Who says that sports are a fraud? Then that came after having won the league with Ajax. Or didn't win the league with Ajax.
He won
the league at Ajax. And comes to United and United don't even know what's in them.
He doesn't see making a fraud.
So that's what I think. I think that Liverpool could also have considered him, but because of it's Eddie Howe. It's Newcastle United. It's basically what I was thinking about with Finidi and the Super Eagles job. Is Eibar. How they will give a Super Eagles job to an Eibar manager. that kind of thinking. Are you there? You hear me?
I'm listening to you, Alan. I'm with you. I get what you're saying, but really and truly, if Liverpool are ready to back this guy, then we just have to wait and see what happens with him, right? I understand he's also a Pep disciple, which is interesting. We'll be interested to see how that works at Liverpool next season.
Hope you had my rant, my 3 minutes rant, because I think we went offline.
I got your rant fully.
All right. Okay, so this is our run already.
So next up is Xavi. He said that disgrace of Barcelona are looking for. You'll find it.
Yeah, we've talked about that as well.
You should have just left on the high.
Yeah, I've talked about
it. I think we addressed West Ham at the last.
We did. All right, so I think that's about it, right?
Yeah, but we haven't spoken about Champions League and the European games.
No, I mean, I'm talking about his comment we got.
Yeah, that's done.
So
that's done.
Is that the last of the Spotify comments?
Yes, that's the last one.
Okay, so thank you to everyone. All right, so big shout out to everyone who wrote to us. Really appreciate it. All right, so let's reminisce on last night's game at the Allianz Arena. Bayern Munich, Real Madrid 2-2, all to play for in 7 or 6 days from now. Now, I was watching the game, and you know what I've realized with Real Madrid? I think they've hacked this Champions League team. It is public knowledge. Everybody knows that. Oh. They've acted.
You think they've acted?
I think they have acted.
They have the templates, the blueprints. Since.
Because.
You know, I have 14 chapters in titles and trophies. I'm saying.
Because once again, I was watching the game yesterday, and it was very obvious that they have just leave everything to pure chance. And they're just like, see, bring everything you've got. You cannot hurt us. And like Tuchel said after the game, he said, you can analyze Real Madrid, though, but you just don't know when they're going to hit you.
Yeah.
You know, it just takes 5-10 seconds and the ball is in the net.
True.
And unfortunately, for Bayern Munich, who I thought had at least two moments of domination of the game. First one was at the beginning of the game.
True.
And first, the second one is, yes. And the second one was at the beginning of second half when they equalized and took the lead and probably could have scored more.
Yeah.
Their failure to take advantage of these two crucial periods, you know, might come back to haunt them, you know, at the Bernabeu, right?
True. And I like to see in-game management. People need to understand how much in-game management means to football. And, you know, I like the way Tuchel responded in the second half. Taking out Goretzka, it was a bit of a surprise to bring on Guerrero. And at some point, they looked like they switched to a 4-1-4-1.
Yeah, they went direct.
Yeah, because Lena was really good. Conor Lena was really good in midfield. He coped with everything Real had to offer. But then, the idea of playing Musiala on the left was also pretty good. It was interesting. Starting Muller was interesting as well. And, you know, knowing that Lucas Vazquez are always going to leave gaps at the back because he's a winger come fullback. And I think they tried to exploit that. But you have to also love Real, Carlo Ancelotti, and how he has used a player like Tchouaméni. Tchouaméni shows a lot of intelligence and know-how that I think is beyond his years in being able to interpret the roles that he's found in. Playing in midfield and then at times being dropped into central defense. Now, I don't think there are many coaches in the game today that have the luxury of being able to start Toni Kroos, take him out, and bring up a Luka Modric. They're talking a combined over 70 years of experience combined, you know, in midfield. And you could see how much damage those two are able to do when they're at the peak of their powers playing in midfield. Vinicius has mastered the art of playing so well in between the lines of the right fullback and the right center back. It's I don't think anybody plays that position well in finding that space and running into it swiftly, especially when
and he has back. Also owned he has really honed his finishing.
Oh, yes, he has owned it.
Yeah, he's owned it.
It's in a situation where the center back is having a torrid time. And that's Kim. Kim Min-jae had a torrid time yesterday. So, Real just put themselves in a very good position to take the game to the second leg of the Bernabeu. And I wouldn't be putting anything past them getting to another final.
For all of the evidence we have of the 14 European Cups and so many world-class players, like Bini, like we just mentioned, there is still sometimes a mystery over how this modern Madrid have actually managed this. Because they seem to leave so much to pure chance, like I said earlier on, in a way that they shouldn't even need to. Now, I know that there's obviously intent and design here, given their recent record of success. Yeah. But does that really involve the opposition getting into their box so often? Do you know how many times Bayern were in Madrid's box yesterday? There was one spell in the first half when Madrid had 9 players back in their box. True. They were all waiting to pounce on any open space. It was like Sean Dyche at Burnley. Honestly. But on the other hand, too. On the other hand.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I wanted to say that Bayern also could have done with a bit of more defensive robustness themselves. Now, you mentioned Kim Min-jae, right, who had a torrid time for the two goals he conceded. But since the beginning of the season, Tuchel has always complained about their lack of protection for their back four. They lack it. That is why he wanted to get Palinia. They didn't work. That's always been the cause of friction between him and Ole Gunnar and the higher ups at Bayern. They are telling him, make do or with what you have. And and it's just not, and it might just cost them. It might just cost them. Yeah. Because, I mean, the casual nature of what happened on that position was that Vinny just sped through that position and Kim Min-jae came out of his defense, stepped out, was caught out, and
because they failed to press the man on the ball. So that gave an opportunity for that person to see the pass for Vinny. Now, you're talking about the amount of touches teams get in the box of Real. You know, you can also almost ascribe the same thing to Manchester United. So that's chaos. That's the chaos. But we're talking about the fact that this is a team that is well, in all of this, they're still a well-drilled and well-oiled machine. That irrespective of whatever chances they also give you, they have the potential of knocking you off when they also get their opportunity. Look, Ancelotti has been at this for too long. He is a master. Even though a lot of Real fans don't like it, they don't enjoy the football, they don't enjoy, you know, some of the torture that they go through in some of the games, but it's a proven method that has won and is winning. So you have to just live with it. And I think that's what Ancelotti offers you with this current Real Madrid side.
And once again, Toni Kroos was, I mean, that guy.
Toni Kroos.
Yeah, I don't know how Madrid.
He was happy being taken off, you know?
Yeah. I'm trying to imagine where Madrid will be without Kroos. Because of the way he regulates the tempo of the game.
Oh, yes.
Yesterday, he did that again. He regulated the tempo of the game. And, you know, you can't buy that in the market anymore. I'm not sure there are more players who can give you that in the market these days.
You can't buy it in the market again. You can't. I read a piece about a few weeks ago where they were looking for potential replacements for Toni Kroos for the future. And all the guys they mentioned, I think the only person that comes close was Rodri. That's the only person that came close. Every other person they mentioned,
Kroos might not run in the game, but that's all Valverde, Camavinga, Tchouaméni are for.
And
he can pass. In fact, no one in this competition completes a higher percentage.
At all. And it's not sideways passes. All kinds of passes.
Oh, yeah.
Diagonal, frontal, all kinds of passes.
And you remember the famous comment of Riquelme on Kroos? He said Kroos was the closest thing footballers to Roger Federer. He can go out, play, go home, not even needing to bat. He doesn't sweat. Yeah. He doesn't get dirty. He doesn't need to throw himself down. He just needs to point the way. Just like he pointed the way to Vinny. No, that was a filthy pass.
And it's the only reason why I might take Germany a bit seriously at the Euros.
Yeah, I agree. What do you make of Harry Kane? He's now scored, I think, 43 goals.
43 goals in 43 games.
Why is he not constantly mentioned in this Ballon d'Or conversation?
We've had this conversation, Wally.
We did that last episode, yeah.
We had this conversation. Baba needs to deliver something. He has to deliver a trophy. Yes, and it doesn't look good that you deliver anything at this point.
I also think that the redemption of Thomas Tuchel has reached some very good percentage this season. His reputation took a big hit at the point in time because of Leverkusen. But this Champions League run has restored him. And like we said at the beginning of this sport, some Bayern fans even want him to stay. Although, the reason why they want him to stay also is born from the fact that they don't want Ralf Rangnick. Because of the potential Red Bullification of Bayern Munich. You know, there's also Max Eberl, their sporting director, who has links to Red Bull as well, you know. So they don't want that. So that's why they say, okay, let's just keep Thomas Tuchel. But Tuchel's reputation, in fact, has become more enhanced. Tonight's Champions League game has got the imprint of Thomas Tuchel written all over it.
Oh, yes.
Dortmund and PSG. The last time even this Bayern side got to the final of the Champions League, they met a side that was tutored, they played their PSG, right? This season after, it was Thomas Tuchel in the final with Chelsea. And there's a bit of disrespect that Tuchel gets when there's a conversation about managers in the European game. But we always forget that he's also one of the best tacticians in the game.
Yeah, so I think the issue has to do with the consistency in his delivery. And when I mean delivery, I mean in delivery of silverware. He's not consistent. So, especially when it comes to league, you know, league titles. Yes, he won last season at Bayern, but only by the score of their neck. This season is lost out to Leverkusen at PSG, Chelsea. You know, so I think it's that consistency that doesn't put him in that conversation. But then there's also the flip side where people might tell you that maybe he's more of a cup manager. You know, he's better in executing cup campaigns, right? And you know, so I think
Ala Simone Inzaghi.
Oh yes. So you know, so you have to. That's why I don't think he gets that much credit, because he's not consistent in delivering silver.
All right, we'll see what the second leg springs up with. But trust me, this is far from over. By the way, I don't know if you caught it. I went a bit small viral, sir. I prepared a 2-2 result yesterday on the radio.
You did? And you didn't send it?
Oh, yeah. I listened to my show now.
I was busy yesterday.
Even your CEO, your CEO also should have got rid of it. The I was very much particular on it. I went with a draw or an over 2.5, and I said correct for 2-2. So I think a draw and over 2.5 was like I think 8.70. A correct score 2-2 was correct score 2-2 was 12.5.
Whoa!
Yeah, it was 12. Yeah. Yeah, I was on it, and it was quite worthy.
Yeah, tonight's result as well.
You know the interesting about tonight's game? I think yes, 2-2 as well. Yeah, that's why.
Right, now you're overdoing it.
Oh yeah, so I didn't tell you to take all of your money, you know, to. But I think it also ends with a similar result. Yeah. By the way, PSG have to be careful. Dortmund have not lost in 10 in Europe at home.
Yeah.
But we call them Jekyll and Hyde. They are so unpredictable. You don't know. Yeah. You don't know what you'll get with Dortmund. Look at them over the weekend. Jadon Sancho scores a fantastic goal, and they collapse after that and concede 4.
I realize you finished them.
Look at them against Atletico Madrid. Look at them against Atletico Madrid.
10 minutes of madness, and they're almost out. And they found.
You don't know what you get with them.
Yeah, you don't know. You just don't know. But I would really love to see a PSG Real Madrid final. For obvious reasons, can Kylian Mbappe put the nail in the team that is potentially going to join? Can we apply the finishing touch and tell them that, guys, this is what you're going to get next season, you know? Or would he have would he be missing? Would he go missing in the final when he faces Real Madrid? That's why I would like to have that final, you know, between those two.
I will bet all of my money on Mbappe showing up in the final. He shows up in big games. He shows up in big games. Yeah. But I already have my reputation on Dortmund getting to the final. So
and go on. We're hoping for that 10%. I can collect 10%.
Dortmund, I think Dortmund gets in final. They are very unpredictable side, honestly. They are. And that's why I think if they get to the final and get Real Madrid, these are two chaotic sides. It should make for a good show. Bayern will destroy them. That's some reminiscing too.
Bellingham and his former team.
Oh yeah, that's another interesting subplot, right?
Yeah.
And remember that he also left in what looked like a shadow.
Yeah.
About the fact that he was seeing himself as larger than life. We'll see, but I mean, whatever we get in the final should be interesting.
I'll put some money on your tutu. Hopefully, it delivers.
Yeah, we'll see. I also put some small change on it. Yeah. All right. What else? What did you make of Arsenal Spurs?
Good performance by Arsenal. I thought it was Arsenal did the basics and they did it well.
It was a strange game. I don't think Arsenal played well in the first half.
The refereeing decisions could have changed the flow of that game.
Yeah.
The goal sports scored, I thought, was a good goal. Shouldn't have been called offside. Aside that, I guess Arsenal just did what they had to do. They were very clinical in the opportunities they got, especially Saka's second goal. That was a fantastic counter-attacking break. Spurs definitely missed the impact of a player like Udoji in that game because Ben Davies can't do what that boy does.
Udoji also is not a defensive kingpin. He's more of an offensive guy.
Yeah, but
on that day, I think Kevin Davies did the basics well in terms of defending Saka. Yeah. It was very close to him. Except for the goal. The second goal was a counter attack down. He showed him the way to heaven. He showed him the way to heaven. I understand.
He now did the most obvious thing. Showed Saka to his left foot.
No. Yeah, he showed him the way to heaven. I understand. But no. Maybe after that, he had a good.
Come on.
That was good.
And Son was anonymous until the penalty.
Yeah, it was.
So it was a good team performance from the Gunners and definitely will boost their confidence for the four remaining games to the end of the season.
All right, just before we wrap up, I wanted to also take your thoughts on the Europa League games and the conference. I mean, there are some very interesting matchups.
Very tasty matchups. Roma taking on Bayer Leverkusen. Very, very interesting potential matchup. I think I'll be watching that one tomorrow, even though my second team will be away at Marseille. Roma have largely surprised me since Daniele De Rossi took over. They've shown a lot of staying power. They've shown a lot of variation as well in their play. And of course, they continue to show how important Dybala is to them.
Oh, yeah.
And I like the fact that Tammy Abraham is back and scoring goals. So it gives them a different option from Lukaku. And the likes of Lorenzo Pellegrini are also, finding good form. But for Leverkusen, they also have shown a lot of staying power. They refuse to lose.
They are the definition of staying power. They are actually the definition of staying power.
No matter how many goals they go behind, they always find a way to come back. And they've also rotated a lot lately. Obviously they won the league, so they have that luxury. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with them, how they cope with some of the things Roma will throw at them. It'll be a potential, a good game for the neutrals to watch. I think there'll be goals in the game as well. Both teams are capable of scoring goals. So I'm really looking forward to that. It'll be interesting to see who wins that first leg. If Leverkusen can take a draw back to the Bayer Arena, Leverkusen will make it to the final.
Anyways, the game also gives us echoes of Jose Mourinho. Remember that Europa Conference League, right? Semi-final.
Oh, and
that game left Alonso. He left him emotionally scarred. Because Mourinho showed him shaking.
Oh my God, Mourinho tortured them.
Mourinho showed him shaking.
Oh my God. Alonso's
brains on what happened over two legs in that game, because emotionally, psychologically, Alonso was. I thought those that were also key ingredients of what made him what he is right now.
Because they
did all of the playing, and Roma became so street smart, managed the game, you know, stopped the flow of the game. Mourinho crazy game. By the way, your Atalanta side, I think, are having a hell of a season. Copa Italia final, Champions League qualification, Europa League semi-final. Thumbs up to Gianpiero Gasperini.
Thumbs up. If you can get two finals, two cup finals, at least win one trophy. Takes a big monkey off his back,
but there's no Scamacca for final Coppa Italia. I think he's suspended.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, but they are more than Scamacca.
They are more than. It's a proper team. A lot of good actors, good players who are selfless and contribute to the cause.
And I make bold to say this, that Ademola Lookman is the best Nigerian player in Europe right now.
Overall, yes.
He's the best player in Europe right now.
People have a tendency of just looking at it from the numbers perspective.
What numbers? Let's talk about it.
No, you know, they'll tell you goals, assists, you know, and stuff like that. But he is
Victor Boniface.
Victor Boniface has 11 goals. Lookman has 9. You know. So for a player that plays as a support striker, sometimes plays as the arrowhead, he's very hardworking, very selfless.
If you know your football, then you agree with me. I'm not imploring you, I'm not begging you. I'm trusting it on you. Ademola Lookman is the best player in Europe right now from Nigeria.
It is the way
Ademola Lookman is interpreting the spaces he's getting into.
Yes. And the funny thing was, when he made that move to Atalanta, I was very critical about it. One, as someone who supports Atalanta. Secondly, as someone who thought that, come, this guy, your trajectory needs to be a lot different. But I think he's humbled himself very well, gotten soaked into the project at Atalanta, and definitely contributing in leaps and bounds. So I tend to agree with you on that premise.
Although I think that his move was facilitated by this English guy who used to be at Everton, Lee Congerton, is the sporting director at Atalanta. You don't know Lee Congerton? Lee used to be at I think Leicester and Everton. He's now at Atalanta. So I think it was through those links Ademola Lookman came to Italy, and he has really adapted. I mean, Lookman can play in the right half space. He can play in the left half space. He can play as a false nine. He can play as a winger. No.
He has everything.
His technical awareness is on another level. His
discipline.
Another level. And for you to be able to exhibit that in a league that doesn't give you space.
They don't give you time. They are very critical of everything you do. He's done well.
Yeah, big chance. All right, yeah.
Villa Olympiacos, rather.
Oh, Villa Olympiacos. Yeah, Villa should win that.
Yeah. It'd be nice for Villa to get to the final, probably win that competition. The back-to-back English teams winning that competition would be nice. They will follow suit from the Champions League last season. That'd be nice.
Yeah. It was an
almighty scare, though, against Lille.
But the worry for Villa is that the deeper they are getting into this, they also have to watch what is happening with Spurs. Spurs are 5 points behind, but have two games in hand.
Spurs play tomorrow as well.
They play Chelsea tomorrow. You don't know what you get with Chelsea. You might beat them 6-0, you might beat them 4. You don't know. So
you just don't know.
If Spurs do beat Chelsea, if Spurs beat Chelsea, then Villa have to be very wary because their return rate of from Europa League to Premier League is not too good.
It's not too good. It's never fair on anybody. It's never fair. And just as Liverpool.
So they have to be very, very, very careful about that. They have to keep an eye on Spurs.
Yeah.
But they've had a wonderful season.
And it'll be interesting to see if China can also make it back-to-back finals as well. They take on Club Brugge. It'll be interesting to see if Italiano can make it back-to-back finals in the Conference League. He also needs to get the trophy monkey off his back as well. So that's another interesting plot.
All right, we gotta go, and I've got a meeting coming up in about 5-10 minutes, so I gotta prep for that. But in the meantime, keep writing to us. We can't wait to read from you.
Adewale Bello, thank you for that.
That was interesting.
That was interesting. I mean, and it helped us to create a rundown for the show. So
I appreciate it. Exactly.
So this podcast is still open for sponsorship opportunities. So hook us up. Our female listeners were so willing to hear from you. We heard from somebody in Poland. Be nice to hear from somebody from Russia. Write us at footballfixng@gmail.com and follow me at YemiTM442 on Twitter and Instagram. While you can follow him on at Oliwal on Instagram and at Sports Adigun on Twitter. So it's been nice doing this as always. Hopefully,
and please remember to
watch tonight.
Keep sharing the podcast. I mean, you guys enjoy this, right? How about you just share with your friends as well?
Share, families, post in all your groups, your WhatsApp groups. Post on Twitter, post on this, post everywhere. Let's get more.
If you find a better football podcast, I will tell you go and leave Wale and Yemi football podcast. if you find a better football podcast in Nigeria, no, I'll tell you don't listen to us anymore. That's how confident I am about the quality of the podcast you get every week from us. So do have a lovely rest of the week. It's a holiday today. Happy Workers Day as well. Insanity returns tomorrow. If you also listen to us from the field queues as well, we wish you the very best. Hope you can get your field on time for your generators and for your cars as well.
Nigeria is just hard.
It's hard. Like, if they play PS1, they go say easy, medium, and hard, the difficulty level.
Yes.
Nigeria just did hard.
Just
hard. All right. Have a great one, guys. Ciao, ciao. Yeah, bye.